Hey, Mark, I'd like to start today getting a little bit personal.
Okay, Drew, let's do it.
Do you have a pet?
I do.
What can you tell me about your pet?
She's a little dog named Izzy. She's going to be 13 next year, we think.
Oh, wow.
And she likes to bark at everyone and everything.
Is she a good girl?
The best.
She's the best. Well, I don't know if that's like 100%
true. Wow, okay.
Because I also have a dog who, okay, let's be honest, she's not the best either. But like she's a good girl. Molly is a good girl. I love my dog.
Yeah, me too.
I have, you know,
moderate. My dog, not your dog.
I have moderate feelings of affection for your dog. Yeah. But I think that is a common thing among, you know, people of our generation.
People with hearts who care.
Well, I think people had hearts before millennials came on the scene. Although that's, you know, scientists haven't conclusively
determined. No one's studied it.
No one has, to be fair. But I guess to lead into kind of our topic for the day, you know, I'm just going to give you a little factoid out there that the largest share of pet owners in the United States are millennials, in fact. That
makes sense because millennials cannot afford to have children.
That is perhaps part of it, but there's certainly a lot of affection for pets and especially dogs among millennials. So here's just a little trivia estimation question for you.
Okay.
Let's say I'm going to give you a number here. There are 127 million households in the United States, you know, like
okay.
a family or a group of people living together for uh-huh. whatever their circumstance. What number of that 127 million households, like how many of them own a dog?
So we're saying how many of those households have at least one dog?
Yes.
Because you can't do the math of like.
Correct. We're not counting number of dogs. We're saying how many households are, in fact, dog households.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. That doesn't include things like dorms and stuff, right? Probably in that calculation.
I confess I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to assume not because I think then that number would probably be higher because, look, the U.S. population is like 330 million. You're saying like a third of people.
127 million households. And yeah. Like how many people really live in a dorm? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. I want to say something like 40%. So we'll say like 35 million.
Okay. That's a pretty good guess. It's actually higher.
Okay.
Well, 65 million households.
So it's like two-thirds.
Half. Well, it's like, yeah, a little over half of U.S. households have a dog, in fact.
Wow. And so that's dogs only, not inclusive. I'm curious what the number is for cat owners.
Cats is a little closer to your guess. It's 46.5 million.
And then the Venn diagram where those two meet?
I can't run the number here, but like total 66% of households have a pet, and if it's 50% or dog households and like 40% are cats, you know, it's pretty high. Dogs are still the most popular though.
Sure.
We love our good boys and our good girls.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you today about someone else who loved his
cat Stevens.
His pet as well. No.
Famously, by the way, you know why I say that?
Cause
he has a song called I Love My Dog.
Oh
yeah. Great
song. The great irony, I guess.
Cat Steven. Yeah, it's true.
Now, today we're talking about John Wick.
Ah, yes, the famous dog movie.
Yeah.
Up there with the likes like Homeward Bound.
I think that's right.
Marley and Me.
Old Yeller.
Yeah. there is a little bit of thematic.
A little bit of a similarity overlap there. So have you seen John Wick?
I have seen the first one.
I have also only seen the first one. Do you know how many there are, in fact?
I think there's four.
Yeah, that's right. There are four.
They're making a fifth.
A fifth one scheduled for next year. So this has been a very, very popular movie series. And it all started with maybe the most tragic circumstance a millennial could possibly imagine.
A Russian mobster shooting your dog?
Yes. That is, in fact, how the whole events of all of the John Wick movies start off with that. John Wick, of course, is, you know, this.
I'm sorry, did you say every John Wick movie
shows
his dog getting shot?
The impetus for the whole storyline starts with
what
that
kicks
in the
off
first movie.
John Wick coming out of retirement.
As I understand, yeah, he's kind of like a retired assassin sort.
I think his like the if I remember from the first movie, the dog was a gift from his like now dead wife.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so he had like retired into a life of obscurity. Then this Russian mobster yuppie shoots his dog.
Just kind of like out of spite, right?
Yeah. I want to say they're at like a gas station or something and like John Wick's not engaging with them being like little shits or something or like tells them to cool it or whatever the case, right? And then they like shoot his dog and then Russian mobster's daddy, who is like the Don of the mafia, is like, do you realize what you've done? He's the one the boogeyman checks for under his bed. There's, you know, some like over the top line, and I think
yeah. So it
teenage
turns out,
boys everywhere were like, "Oh my god!"
That was like the most, you know, dangerous thing you could possibly do, right? Like you shoot at John Wick, that's one thing. You shoot at the dog, like
yeah.
You better.
He's the Baba Yaga, right?
That's right, the Baba Yaga, the one who comes in the night or whatever.
Yeah, you would know all about that. You.
I
Russian
should,
historian.
Basically. I should know more about it than I do, but I just kind of know it as like a scary boogeyman that apparently John Wick is, you know, at least two Russian mobsters. So, we're going to talk about John Wick.
And a topic that we are both intimately knowledgeable about.
Let's go ahead and get that elephant in the room addressed. I've not seen the rest of the movies, but it turns out there is a pinball machine, and that fills in all the narrative gaps for me, I think, right? Like, I imagine. Yeah. Just playing the machine will probably tell you all
Look,
you need to know.
Here's my opinion about John Wick, having only seen the first movie as well, is there is no narrative, like there's no plot, I think, in any of these movies. It's just like an excuse to get from action set piece to action set piece.
Yeah.
And my understanding is the action choreography, and this was true in the first one, the action choreography is beautiful and like really well done. And I think that's the case. Like they've just upped the stakes of like what ridiculous things can we do now, right? Like there was a preview on like the third or fourth one where he's on a horse doing a gunfight with motorcyclists. Like
I'm sorry, what? A what? Like a horse?
Yeah.
Like a horse?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So like that's like the stuff that I'm imagining. Like so like right, we might as well be experts in John Wick as far as I'm concerned because – there's going to be no lore knowledge to know.
Yeah, I think it's not super relevant to the pinball machine, and that's really what we're here to talk about. So
John Wick, the pinball machine.
Let's give it a little introduction here. It is a modern Stern pinball machine. We've talked about some of these modern Sterns before.
Yeah.
They generally put out two a year, and we've talked about one of those that came out this year, Jaws.
Oh, new machines.
New
not,
machines.
Not
yeah.
Like production. They produce two of them.
Yeah. They're gold-plated, literal diamonds for the glass in front of the pinball machine.
And just diamond pinballs, I think.
Wow, that'd be cool. Now that's all I want.
Yeah.
But no, they produce two new models a year, and then however many thousands they can sell, they'll make them. And John Wick is the second one of this year, 2024.
Oh, wow.
And so it's a very... very
hot,
new machine.
Hot off the presses.
Yeah, hot off the presses, right? So John Wick was designed by Elliot Eisman, someone whom we have not featured on the podcast yet.
But has he done – do you know, has he done other machines?
I haven't looked it up. Do you have – have you looked this up?
I have not. It's when it's a question I have for when I see a machine with a creator that we haven't seen before. I like to just see if like – is this their first foray into it? And in part because we've talked a little bit about prolific creators over time, and I'm curious to see when the new guard sort of starts to evolve. And I've pulled it up, and he has done some work, not as a game designer. He's been on the mechanics team for other modern Stern machines, including James Bond, Rush, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and other modern Stern machines, but this appears to be his first game design credit.
So it looks like somebody who's worked at Stern for many years on kind of behind the scenes, not behind the scenes, like on the game team,
yeah,
but maybe more in a production kind of mechanical role, and now kind of
first design
stepping
elements.
Up to be like lead of the design. And I don't know how
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't know how they organize their work and their office environment there at Stern, but that does seem pretty cool that someone has been
good for you, Elliot.
Yeah, around the business long enough to kind of know and be able to take that step up to be a lead designer. So that's really cool. So welcome to the podcast, Elliot. Oh, wait, sorry. He's not actually here. Not yet, but maybe.
Someday.
Maybe we can get him on. Yeah, so that's a little bit about the machine. It's still in production. We've talked about this before. We don't really have production numbers for this because it's just so new. They don't make, you know, 10,000.
There's 10, at least 000. Two of them. Yeah. That's what you said.
They don't make like 10,000 machines and then like say, surprise, we made a new machine. They say, hey, we've got this new machine, and drum up interest and then kind of churn them off the line as people buy them. So that's what we got. Let's talk a little bit about the John Wick machine and kind of what makes it unique.
Okay.
It's a pretty standard kind of pinball layout. We've talked about this in the past with like the standard sort of like 8-shot layout. You know, it's got ramps, it's got loops, it's got, you know, little orbits and things.
Things we've all come to expect.
Yes, but the unique aspects are kind of like not the physical layout so much as the mission or mode sort of modes that you play. It's all based around combat, kind of like a well-choreographed John Wick fight scene.
Okay.
You're trying to kind of like take out enemies, and enemies will appear on the playfield as like shots. And there is an AI combat system. And now this is not the AI that is getting a lot of press these days in terms of...
This is AI like back when you would play any old computer.
Right. So there's sort of a... And I think they even hedge their bets and say it's not, you know, this is not... Whopper taking over the world level AI. This is you know, kind of a rudimentary algorithm that kind of adapts.
Where's my War Games pinball machine? Now that you made this Whopper reference, that would be sick.
Yeah. Anyone out there want to work with us on designing a War Games pinball machine?
Sorry, please continue.
We are here. Yeah. We are here for that.
We are too strong.
Yeah. Too strong. I'm talking about not just buying. I would be happy to help design a War Games pinball machine.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There are two of us.
Yeah, email address on the website. Please get in touch.
flippingoutpodcast.com.
I'm willing to take, you know, 10% less than the traditional cut of whatever royalties, you know, a designer typically takes, just because it's my first pinball machine.
And you love War Games so much.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, sorry. I rabbit hold you.
You know, you nerd sniped me there a little bit. But yeah, so... the AI fight system is kind of the unique thing there, where enemies will appear and kind of move around the playfield to like adapt to where your shots maybe aren't landing or whatever. I'm not quite sure how that works out, but they make a big deal out of it on the marketing
page.
So
in theory, like, it adapts to how you're playing. And presumably if you play poorly, maybe it's a little more forgiving.
Yeah. I think
almost like the director in like Left 4 Dead or something.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. I think the point is you can't just memorize, you know, the order of the shots. So
that's kind of cool.
You know, Tommy is not going to be able to do very well on this particular machine because he can't see where the AI is putting the enemies, you know?
Like, yeah, okay.
So we'll see how that plays out.
Tommy wouldn't really be able to see much of anything.
No, but he's really good at pinball because he can just remember. He can hear it.
He's deaf, dumb, and blind.
Right, he can't. God damn. How did he play pinball? I don't know.
Through sense of smell, I think, is one of the lyrics.
I think that's correct, yes.
And feel.
So anyway, maybe he would be really good at this pinball machine. And your general objectives in this are to, you know, go on missions for the various crime families in whatever generic city it is that John Wick is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so there is like some lore that I don't know.
Yeah, there are these like, there are crime families. I think it's really just kind of slapping on the name of the crime families to the different missions. And
okay, there's not like I'm selecting to ally with one particular family or something.
I don't think so, but we can find
out. Great.
And then you know, you're going to go on these missions. You're going to fight generic enemies. You're going to go on like car chases. Maybe a horse chase if you get lucky.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be like you're living out your John Wick fantasies, doing whatever you can. And
okay.
And as far as I can tell, probably watching most of the like dialogue and exposition scenes from the three John Wick movies that we haven't seen. So I think by the end of it, we will fully understand the
Perfect.
John Wick
story.
Yeah,
yeah. So why bother watching the movies? I'm just going to watch it while I play.
Yeah, I think it'll be very, very easy.
Okay.
Beyond that, you know, a couple cool, unique features to watch out for. There is a hidden weapons crate. I guess John Wick, you know, is hiding weapons in kind of unique places in his apartment or whatever.
Okay.
And the weapons crate will, it's like a little decal on the field that will actually kind of open up and give you access to like a different shot. So it's a part of the play field that like opens up to reveal a new shot, basically.
All right, that's cool.
That's kind of neat. We already mentioned the unique kind of like AI combat system. And then beyond that, like a lot of the modern Stern machines, it's got a little QR code reader on the side. You can kind of log into it, and it'll keep track of your scores, and it'll keep track of your assassin level, which I think is kind of like, how good are you at John Wick overall? Okay. I'm not sure whether that affects the gameplay or whether that is just...
But that's like, kind of a cool novelty, some like perma progression.
Yes,
not exactly. A thing that really exists in pinball.
Right, it's kind of a unique thing. We've seen it in a couple of pinball machines, yeah. I think, but a relatively new thing on the pinball scene to have this sense of like... It's not the same game every time you play it, or
that's cool.
You have some sort of like goals to keep you coming back, and
that's fun.
Yeah, that really. I mean, we can talk for a second about that just in general. I think that really could be almost like my first gut reaction when I first heard of that was like, oh my gosh, they're just trying to like get me addicted, right? They're trying to like
mission give me accomplished. An
excuse. Yeah, I guess right. Turns out they didn't need that. Joke's on them. I'm addicted either way.
Yeah,
but I actually kind of like it. I kind of like it as like an idea to sort of spice up the game of pinball.
It is fun because I think that it's also helped me in some machines identify objectives because like when you unlock certain modes or objectives, like a new achievement unlock, and so you can sort of see like what you've done and what you haven't done. If you go back in and retroactively look at your achievements, you can figure out where do you want to try to progress next.
Yeah, it helps you learn a machine for the first few games or whatever. So as implemented by Stern in a few of their games so far, I think it's good so long as it doesn't like totally change the game every time you play it.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. So let's go log into some John Wick machine and play some games.
Yeah, let's go merc some noobs.
Okay, we're back. Mark, did you save any doggos?
No, but if I understand the lore correctly, that was never an option.
Yeah, I think it wasn't. There are some dogs on the machine, and I think that there must be dogs in later John Wick movies.
I think at the end of the first one, he gets the pit bull. I think it's
a yeah.
Bull.
So yeah,
which is the one we see on the artwork.
And that dog, I think I did not, you know, lose. So
this is worth noting, right? We're playing the pro version because this, as with modern Sterns, there are multiple flavors.
That's right. We played the pro for this particular one. I'm not quite sure what we're missing out on the premium. I don't think I've seen it.
Yeah, anywhere. It's been unclear to me. I haven't seen it in the wild, and I took a quick look at some documentation. And nothing like jumped out at me. It's just like looking at the playfields differently, but I only took a quick glance.
Yeah, I'm looking at some pictures right now, and I can't for the life of me tell. Like a lot of times there's like an upper playfield that is
usually
obviously
something
missing.
Obvious.
Hmm.
Whatever.
In any case, yeah, we played the pro.
I got to tell you, not to get ahead of you too far, like my first impression of this is like, and I'm going to feel bad saying this because now we've learned that this is the creator's like first game design. It felt... meh.
Yeah. I think that is – I don't think I felt quite as
– I wish I had like an excoriating take actually. You know, like I wish it wasn't – it was like horrific or something because then I'd have like hot opinions about it. But I felt like – it felt very milquetoast to me.
Yeah. I think that for me there really is no huge downside to any of the pinball machine in that like it felt – clean. The shots felt fast. The shots felt satisfying to hit. It felt like mechanically like everything was dialed in. Right.
A lot of that I sort of attribute to it being like fresh off the shelf.
And that's probably a good point is that maybe, you know, for all we know, we were the first two people ever to play it. I think probably not. But
no,
like,
probably not.
But, you know, among the first few at this particular venue, you know, it's been there for a couple
months.
Yeah,
if you think of
the
number of plays it's gotten, it's still probably in the triple digits.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, maybe 1,000. Who knows? But, like, you're right. Like, it felt fresh. It felt good.
Agreed.
And, like, nothing wrong with the design of the machine. Like, let's go ahead and dive into kind of, like, how we looked at this machine because that will help maybe explain why you feel the way you do. You know, we looked at, like... the design of the machine, you know, the shot layout, the rule set, how does it play as a game? How does it feel as like a physical object? Then we talk about like the theme, you know, does it kind of pull you into the theme? Is the theme well connected to the rest of the machine? And then just in general, you know, how fun is this machine? Like, I guess I like to think of that as like, when I get done with a game, do I just want to keep playing?
Yep.
You know, that's kind of how I think about that. So I guess I'll kick us off with design. I think, and this kind of speaks to what you were talking about earlier, that this feels kind of like a lot of pinball machines. Like there are kind of just like, we've talked about the 8-shot layout where there's kind of like two scoops, two ramps, two big targets, and then like
a scoop or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then like,
I think all of those things are here.
Yeah. I think it felt almost like just generic pinball machine number 7, you know, like it's like off the presses. We got a pinball machine. It's not a bad pinball machine, but you compare it to, you know, some of the more unique machines that have kind of like interesting, like upper flipper shots or like an upper play field or some kind of like crazy toy or mechanic or some unique thing.
Yep.
And it just didn't have that. And like, to me, one of the things that I want in a pinball machine is something that like only this pinball machine has. And I just wasn't getting it from John Wick.
Yeah. I think you summed it up very, very well. Like the weapons crate was a thing that you identified as like something that should open up and like offer like a secret shot. But like for the life of me, and maybe that's a pro versus premium difference, don't know, because for the life of me, I couldn't figure out a way to get that to open. I don't think you had any success with that.
No. And that was really frustrating. I put an extra $2 into the machine after my, you know, my oh, really? Like competition score games just to try and open the weapons crate. And I'm sure right now someone's listening to this and just saying like, ha.
What an idiot.
Noob skill issue, right? Like, yeah, and probably, but like, I couldn't figure out the weapons crate shot from reading the rules.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out from playing the game.
I feel a little bit like if for novelties that are game design features, you want players to be able to encounter that.
Yeah. Right?
Because like, that's what sets you apart. It's part of what makes your machine a little bit magical, right? Is because you've got this thing that's never been done before is sort of unique. If I think about Total Nuclear Annihilation, you know, Scott DeNisi created his own ball lock mechanism. And like there's stuff about that that like keeps you thinking about that machine as you compare other pinball machines.
So what do you think like for – let's call us the average pinball player because we're not great. We're not bad. But we're kind of somewhere in the middle.
We get replays fair enough, often enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's call us the average pinball player. Probably not true. We're probably like well above average.
Just sure, yeah, 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 right.
But like for someone like us, how many games of a new pinball machine should we have to play before we've kind of encountered not everything by any means, but like the unique thing that like makes this machine?
I think anecdotally and going through this process has helped me kind of suss that out. Somewhere between 3 and 6 games.
Yeah, I was going to say 3 and 5, right? So like right that same area, like I don't necessarily expect to have the cool mechanism happen on my first game.
Nope.
Maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. But by 3 to 5 or 6
I have
six
an idea of what I want to accomplish by the end of game.
Yeah, yeah. I've kind of got an idea of like feeling the machine out and the fact that I deliberately tried to activate the weapons crate, you know, many different ways, and I couldn't do it. That was was kind of frustrating. So that was a little knock for me. I will say there were some pros that I really liked about this. You know, next to the weapons crate, there was a cool like kind of like a little scoop thing that you would do to launch start a mission, and it has one of those like pop up shots where it like pops it up and then it lands on a little like wire return that takes the ball back to the flipper.
Yep.
And I thought that was a cool use of space to have like that kind of vertical action right there.
Vertical space is a cool use.
Yeah, I think anytime that you've got like multiple entry points to a wire, you know, guide rail kind of thing, that's just really, really nice. A really nice way to kind of like guide the ball back into one sort of return point.
Yep.
So I did really like that spot.
Totally agree.
One other little design that, like, I don't know if you noticed this. I've noticed this on a few machines, but, like, I really, really appreciate it. Do you remember the like, red circle shot on the kind of left side? It was like a nightclub or something. There were pop bumpers back there, right? Mm-hmm. When you come back out, there's kind of one logical place for the ball to fall out. And I think that as the shot is sort of lined up, it almost like it's going to shoot it straight down the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's like a little notch kind of sticking off to the side that has like a target on it that sticks out beyond the wall where the ball would normally be rolling against. And every time it rolls out, the ball hits that notch, pops it to the right just a little bit, makes it land right on the flipper.
I don't think I ever noticed that, but that's kind of a cool design.
I just want to call it out because I've seen this sort of thing on a few other machines, but like that shows to me that, you know, the designer was thinking about the return, not just like hitting the shot, but what happens when you come back.
Yeah.
And that can be so frustrating when like,
absolutely,
when sometimes it just falls out of something that you were supposed to hit and it falls out and goes right down the middle and it, or right down the out lane. But the fact that this notch sticks out just like a centimeter, whatever, yeah, means that it pops out right onto the flipper. So like, thank you for designing.
It's a good use of,
in kind of a thoughtful way.
Yeah. Good use of the space, not just for targeting, but for, yeah, the return is super cool.
Yeah. So go ahead.
My biggest frustration, if I could share it, is that there's no actual ball locks in here. And like, but routinely you hit a shot and it says ball one locked, but the ball just rolls through the rail back down to the flipper. And maybe it's the terminology. I don't know. I feel like I'm a little bit hung up on like, this is like a cheap out for me of like, well, don't call it a ball lock if you're not locking the ball. And that's true, not just when we're in multiplayer mode where you and I are playing back to back.
Yeah.
But like, we took time to play single player games when we do our competition games. And the same thing is there. And I don't understand it. It seems like a design oversight.
Well, I'll say two things to that point. The first is that could be like a setting on the machine to do what's called like a virtual ball lock. I've seen that setting before in other situations.
That's usually for like competition, right?
There are a variety of reasons. Maybe the ball lock mechanism is temporarily failing or whatever. So I don't know for sure whether John Wick has a physical ball lock that maybe was just turned off on the machine that we had.
That's a good point.
But I think the more important point than that even is that like ball lock is called ball lock because physically it was important to like prep balls for multi-ball. But with a computer kind of keeping track of that stuff, the important thing is that you get the balls during multi-ball.
Yeah, however, but like, you get there is them. Something aesthetically pleasing about having them trapped in some
it is pleasing, ways. But like you still have to call it ball lock whether they're trapped or not, right? Because like that's what people know that kind of term as.
Yeah.
Like what would you call it that would make sense if not
ball lock? Yeah, I don't know that I would call it something different. I would just implement a ball lock.
Yeah, I agree. And I think maybe we should look up whether there yeah, is that's like a physical a,
that's
ball a, lock.
I, you're right. I didn't consider that there could be an option for it. Anyway.
Yeah, what'd you give it on a score for design?
2 out of 5. There's nothing really that stands out. And the gimmick that I wanted to see was unreachable. That's the ammo crate.
Yeah.
And the other one that you mentioned that I liked, which is the ejector, the vertical up from that scoop, it's not the first time we've seen it. Like it, and it's been implemented better elsewhere. Specifically, I'm thinking there's a James Bond machine, which we have not covered on the show.
Oh, yeah.
But it shoots up out of a car like an ejector seat, and like thematically that ties in. There is no real theme. There's no – the design of it is cool, but it's not unique enough in a way thematically or from a design implementation point of view to make me interested in it.
Yeah, I get it. I gave it one extra point, so I gave it a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think that we're aligned in terms of like overall vibe, which is that it's a fine pinball machine.
Totally serviceable.
But like it's missing, what would like make it great. And not just like a little thing that would make it great. It's missing a lot of things that maybe we expect as like table stakes for like a great new machine.
Yeah, I think it's just because we've been spoiled. The bar is getting higher and higher.
It's incredibly high. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Like I would play this game again, but it just didn't speak to me.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. So with that in mind, maybe the toughest one for us to talk about today, the toughest category of our three is going to be the theme, because I'll be honest, I expected to get kind of more understanding of the John Wick story from this. And I still don't really know much about it.
Yeah, this is the one I think most spicy and passionate about, actually.
Okay, talk to me.
I find, for the same reason, I expected to come away from this machine with some extra appreciation for John Wick and maybe like a spark to like want to go watch one of the other movies or something. But this does nothing for me as a, what I'll call a John Wick casual. And it feels like this is built for diehard John Wick fans.
Mm.
And specifically, I think of two, like the Stern Insider stuff that we talked about a little while ago is maybe not always meant for casual fans. I think of it as its appeal to pinball fans. All of the achievements that you unlock along the way for hitting certain modes or shots or whatever all seem like weird, deep cut John Wick quotes as like the name of the achievement.
Yeah, I'd hear the sound and I'd be like, I don't know what I did and I don't know what that means.
I don't know what any of this means. And I don't think it's a good look when the theme of a pinball machine sort of alienates your casual audience. And that's a bit how I felt. Like, I felt like everything was like a deep cut. I felt like this is meant for a specific audience, and that audience is people who are absolutely gaga over John Wick as a franchise. And that is not me. And like, I contrast that to the machine that also came out in 2024 that we reviewed a little while ago, Jaws, where the references had broad appeal and, into a degree, like, were a little bit tongue-in-cheek sometimes, right? Like, and it kind of hooked me into wanting to go see the film. Here, I felt like this just pushed me away.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you too. So for me, I didn't really feel much in terms of the John Wick franchise, but I did like some things about the pinball machine that were, I think, thematically related.
Yes.
Like, I really liked the art style.
I loved the cityscape.
That was exactly the other thing that I was going to say, the cityscape. You know, I mentioned earlier that John Wick takes place in some generic city, and I'm sure it's supposed to be like New York or something.
I think it's
right?
supposed to be New York because it's got that like triangle building that I think of as like the Daily Bugle building in Spider-Man.
But like every movie, it's probably filmed in Vancouver, right? Like it's Vancouver / New York. But in any case, you know, I don't associate, you know, John Wick with New York or vice versa. But like the cityscape in the pinball machine.
Russian mob.
Yeah, Russian mob, right? Well, that could be Vancouver. Why not? They're closer to Russia.
Oh, that's excellent.
They could probably see it from their house. So I didn't really get much, you know, specific city vibe from it, but I did really like the buildings and kind of the art of the machine.
That is actually probably one of like the most unique element of this machine is like how often do you see like a skyline sort of embedded. Like, again, that triangle building, I think, is like in front of like the scoop or one of, near like one of those ramps.
Yeah.
Like it's actually comes forward into the play area.
Yeah. There's like a skyline behind the play area. And then that one is like a 3D, you know, it comes out into the play field as like
an
obstacle, right? That you have to go around sometimes. Sometimes you got to hit it.
That helps you feel like you're in the city. And if like the goal is, you know, you're trying to do these takeout missions or whatever, like that's. That ties into that.
Yeah. So for me, pros for the art, for the kind of the classic pinball feel of having like a bunch of faces that you're hitting on the screen or whatever, or the play field.
Yeah.
That's what kind of saved it from being like bottom of the barrel for me on theme. And I gave it a 3, which I feel like is serviceable, average.
Yeah. Here again, I have a 2 because I'm just so frustrated at not feeling included.
Yeah. And That brings us, I think, to the last category, which I feel like sometimes is the one that has the biggest influence on the first two, and that's how much did you actually enjoy playing the machine. If you enjoyed it, maybe it pulls the other scores up higher than they should be. If you didn't enjoy it, maybe it pulls them down. And that's definitely true for me. I am not an unbiased grader of these games. And I'll be honest, I actually really enjoyed playing this John Wick machine. In spite of the fact that, like, I can look back on it now and feel like maybe it's not, like, not anything special.
Yeah.
While I was playing it, I did enjoy it. I felt like the shots were fun and fast, like you'd expect from a modern machine. And I felt like, you know, there was a good balance between having objectives that you were trying to accomplish and the ability to actually make progress on those objectives. So, like, when I was in a particular multi-ball mode, I was able to, you know, hit some of the jackpot shots, and when I was trying to do a mission, like I could see pretty clearly where I was supposed to shoot. So I had a lot of fun, in spite of the fact that I'm probably terrible at it and I couldn't ever get the weapons crate. I still gave this one a 4.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sort of felt the opposite. I felt like during the time that I was playing it, I borderline felt like, when is this game just going to end my suffering? And part of that is probably because I did not play very well. I struggled to hit the shots that I wanted to hit, and I felt like the objectives were never – like I never felt like I was super aware of what I wanted to be doing, like, and where I could be focusing efforts to get good scores. That said, the other thing that kind of bothered me is like I don't think I noticed anything that felt like AI, you know, like like AI no, or whatever. Like
it never came for me either. I never really paid attention
to right. And I think that's part of it for me. And maybe it's because I did. Maybe it just maybe it led to me feeling more confused about objectives and modes. Right. Like if knowing that it's switching shots around,
which light is like part of the AI and which is part of the mode. I don't know.
Yeah. And maybe that maybe this is just a machine that requires more than 6 to 8 plays really to come back to and like really figure it out. But it felt like to me that it was the game itself lacked heart. Like I didn't feel it felt so sort of generic and samey that like I didn't feel like there was like a lot of love for the IP behind it. And none of the shots that I hit ever made me go, wow, like, do you see that? Like, that's cool. Like, come check this thing out. And so like that detracted from fun for me. I felt like I feel like you could sort of reskin it with anything. Right. And like, again, it would just sort of all be the same. Like there was nothing that like popped for me in a way that I think heart is really kind of my summary. And so for me, actually, I gave it a 2.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's kind of the whole thing is that for whatever reason, the most important thing is like the fun. And if you're not having fun, it's hard to appreciate anything else about a machine. And I don't know what to say. What else do you have to say on it?
Nothing else on the fun factor. I mean, we should probably talk about the tragedy that was my scores.
Oh boy, let's do it. Go ahead. You can list your scores first.
Though, yeah. So we do 3 competition games and they were bad. Like all 3 of them were awful. The highest score I got finally cracked 8 digits. So I got 16,458,810, which is, I think looking at the leaderboard that was in the bar, I think is just an atrocious score. I was nowhere near a replay. It was not good.
Yeah. I don't think I did much better. Maybe I just enjoyed it a little more when I was doing
sure.
it.
Sure.
I had fun, but I really didn't. I didn't know like there's got to be some mode that is worth a lot of points that I just didn't know about. Yeah. So I think learning the game would go a long way score wise. But I did beat you out on this particular occasion. 28,682,240.
Nice job.
So yeah, thanks. It's pretty good. Any closing notes?
No. Let me get out of here and get to my dog.